Sports Bettors, Circa Sports now presents Palm Saturdays with Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm. Live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas, here on 104.3 The Score, and watch live on YouTube and Twitch, featuring the latest and the greatest of the sports betting landscape from coast to coast, along with some great guests. Here he is, Mike Palm.
Good Saturday morning to you out there. Yes, the Score is live from 8 to 9, taking you all the way up to Inside the Clubhouse with David Haugh and Bruce Levine. I'm Mike Palm, Vice President of Operations for Circa and Circa Sports, and we're broadcasting live from Bar Canada in downtown Las Vegas. Big program for you today. In about 25 minutes, we'll talk to Jonathan Davis. Jonathan Davis is a professional hockey handicapper. I love chopping it up with John. Interesting time in the NHL off of this Olympic break. What are the betting angles to look at? See if John has any plays on today's card. Also some yes-no playoff props, what he's got in the awards market, and then his thoughts in general on the Blackhawks. Where have they been successful this year? Where have they been disappointing? Very tough for the Blackhawks here. They're going to play in Colorado today, the mountain back-to-back, and it's not even a 24-hour break. 5 o'clock, the puck drops today, and then they get Utah tomorrow with a 3 o'clock puck drop. Let's start out with the thoughts on the Olympics. Last time I talked to you, we didn't know the result. We were awaiting the Sunday morning gold medal game between Canada and the USA right here at Bar Canada. Now, normally we close at 2 a.m. and reopen at 8 a.m., but there was such a demand of people Friday and Saturday saying, can you open Bar Canada so we can watch the game and bet the game right here. And so we decided to open it up. The puck dropped at 5:10 Pacific time, so we opened it up at 4:30. This place last Sunday morning was standing room only. They were back through the slot machines here. A mostly pro-Canadian crowd, of course, as they decided to congregate here. More of a USA crowd down the street at Circa. And I looked here at the TV ratings on this game. I don't know if you'll find a better 2-1 hockey game the rest of your life. I mean, with the stakes that were on the line there, it's totally incredible. But the viewership on this game is very interesting. In the United States, there were 20,700,000 people tuned in to this game. In Canada, there were 8.7 million people watching. Now, considering the populations of the two countries, that's stunning. That's 20% of all the people in Canada were watching that game. If the same percentage were watching in the U.S., that means 70 million people were watching. It would have been the most viewed sporting event, most viewed TV event of all time, with 350 million people if you had 20% watching. I don't know as Americans if we can truly comprehend how devastating this loss is for Canadians. I had the Keno Awards here last Sunday, and I told this story several times this week. You know, I wanted to bust balls a little bit. About a quarter of our players Canadian, and so I opened the awards ceremony with, you know, congratulations to the boys from up north for getting silver, but it's time to admit hockey is America's sport. A lady threw an ashtray at me, and our ashtrays here are not light. I mean, they were so offended by this. We'll talk more with Jonathan Davis. The reaction of the Canadian media to these people, asking Connor McDavid if he's ever going to win anything, right? I mean, in Toronto, they're trying to run Austin Matthews out of town. I mean, they're writing newspaper articles that he must give up his captaincy and give it back to Tavares because he went to the White House and to the State of the Union. He chose Trump over Canada. Well, he is an American. But so ungrateful. What about playing in Toronto where he's made all this money? It's completely outrageous. We'll get into that more as we continue on. But I wanted to get into college basketball today. Only 2 weekends left in the regular season for the Power Four teams in the major conferences. And for the small conferences, this is their final weekend of the regular season as small conference tournaments start next week. Large conference tournaments 2 weeks from now. And just right around the corner, we'll be in the midst of the second round of the NCAA tournament right here on Palm Saturday. Big game in Champaign last night. I was looking forward to it for several weeks. Michigan at Illinois. I ended up laying the 1.5 with Michigan last night. I almost played the over as well. I'm glad I just stuck to one side of it. Now, remember, if you were listening last Saturday, I took a loss with both these teams. I laid 2 with Michigan against Duke, and I have to tell you, I came away with that game with a new appreciation of Duke, how well they played and were able to defend Michigan. No spurts. This Michigan team hits you with spurts. They allowed no spurts, got that into a half-court game. And then, of course, Illinois. You know, we had them to complete a moneyline parlay. They're up 33-10 at UCLA. Mick Cronin is trying to get fired with his nonsense press conferences, and somehow they come back and then have the Tyus Edney coast-to-coast to end the game with a spinning layup. So both these teams burned me last week. They come back last night. Game was closed in the first half, but you could tell, look, Michigan was getting pretty much everything that they wanted to offensively. If you were watching the broadcast on Fox, and great job by Jason Benetti and Bill Rafferty calling the game, in the Illinois huddle, you heard Brad Underwood say, how many layups are we going to give them on this pick and roll? How many layups? That's Illinois' problem, my friends, is that I don't believe that for five straight games, so let's say they're a three seed and they have a relatively easy first round game. I don't believe that for five straight games, Illinois can defend for 40 minutes in order to win a national title. Michigan shot 53% from the field last night. Illinois only 41%. Neither were great from three. And while the final score was 14, with 7 minutes to go, Michigan did lead this game by 23, talking about spurt ability. So where does that leave us when we consider the overall national championship picture? In my heart of hearts, I firmly believe there are four teams that can win the national championship, and I'm on the fence with a fifth. So let's go through them one by one. And I'll take it from a betting perspective here of what's in my portfolio. Now, I got lucky in that one of our customers here bet some lottery tickets for me. And I say lottery tickets. He bet seven-team cross-sport parlays, seven legs that conclude. Well, technically, they conclude with Bayern Munich winning Bundesliga. That's going to happen. That will be in May, but that's going to happen. Okay, so let's say. So that would be the fifth leg in. Then all of them, the sixth leg is the UConn women, which I've loved all year. I love them since they beat South Carolina on February 7th last year. We gave it out on VSiN 4-1. They never won another game by less than 18 points from that point on. That was a seed change moment in women's college basketball. So that will be. We have to thread the needle with the UConn women. Of course, they would play on Sunday in the national championship game on Monday. But he gave me three tickets, and these are all your pizza money tickets, but pay five figures. And the three teams he gave me are Duke, very nice, Houston, and Michigan State. I wish I could cross the ST off, but I'm there with it. On my own, I added at 19-1 Arizona after they beat UConn early in the year, and I added Florida 3 weeks ago at 19-1. So what's the big hole for me? It's obviously Michigan, and that's where I'm going to start. Michigan here at Circa is 3-1. They're the favorite. Now, it's a little bit hard to imagine that Duke's not the favorite because they beat Michigan on a neutral court last week. But Michigan's still the favorite. And you have to remember here at Circa, we have a Michigan bias because Derek, of course, is from Michigan and graduated from the University of Michigan. They are 3-1. I do believe they are the best team. Here's my problem. I don't want to take 3-1 to cover. I want to somehow get into a position in a game where I don't have to spread myself out that far, but I can get one of my teams, if Michigan does advance, where I can get Michigan and not have to lay more than $1.40 or $1.50. I don't know. I might pull the trigger before the tournament starts, but I say right now Michigan is on my one line as the best team. Duke, I think, is the second best team. I had some questions after they lost to North Carolina. You know, Shire has struggled. They blow a 7-point lead to Houston in the last, 80 seconds last year in the national semifinal game, delivering in March late in the tournament. Are they a little bit too dependent on Boozer? Are they a one-player team? Well, they answered a lot of questions for me, and I thought Shire coached a great game last Saturday. This Arizona team is gutty. Now, with the other three teams, I have a lot of respect for the head coaches. I'm not a Tommy Lloyd fan. But this team is very gutty. This might be the most gutty Arizona team since that 97 Lute Olson team that was a four seed, won the title. They beat three number ones on their way to the title. Tuesday night in Baylor, they kept Koa Pete out. They're resting him. He'll be coming back. Obviously, they have Kansas and then Iowa State. I'm trying to get down to Tucson for that game on Monday. So Coa Pete will play. But no Coa Pete. They get down 10 to Baylor in the first half in Waco. I said, oh, this is a loss. This was a bad scheduling spot for them. No, they come back and win the game by 7. And then Florida's my fourth team. Tremendous front court. They have the guards that can match these other elite teams as well. They rebound like no one else. They've been out-rebounded once all year, Arizona. Same thing with UConn. Out-rebounded once all year, it was Arizona. I think Florida has a good shot to get the fourth one seed. So those are my four teams. I think Florida wins out here. I don't see them losing an SEC game. We'll talk about them against Arkansas here in a few minutes. UConn wins out, though. They might get the fourth one seed. Florida, by the way, 10-1. Arizona plus 430. We're looking at national championship odds in college basketball here on Palm Saturdays on The Score. UConn at 13-1. Now, Danny Hurley had enough of Pitino. And on Wednesday night, that was an incredible second half. I don't think I've ever watched a game where a team missed 24 consecutive field goal attempts. 24 consecutive field goal attempts St. John's missed, scoring only 14 points in the second half. 72-40 was that final. I think you might be able to convince me that UConn could win a national championship. Obviously, the team has the pedigree, the program has the pedigree, the coach has the pedigree. Let's draw a line through a few teams here. Here's what we've learned in the last week. I'm drawing a line through the Houston Cougars, and I think Calvin Sampson can coach. I'm not going to comment on the ethics of how he runs a program, but I think the guy can coach. I think he's got a tremendous philosophy on toughening these kids up. I watched him at home against Arizona. You can't go 9 minutes and not have a field goal in a game. You'll get beat in the tournament if you do that. They got the lead at Kansas on Monday night. Still got beat by double digits there. I don't think they're as good defensively as they were last year, and I know they're not as good as offensively. They just don't have guys that you can go to down the stretch in these games in the last 8 minutes of a game and rely on for baskets. They're 950-1. I have a future ticket on them. Draw the line right through the Houston Cougars. I'm sorry, folks. I got to draw a line through Illinois. I just don't think they can defend well enough. Very efficient offensive team. Fun team to watch play. They can play at a very elite level, but you're going to match them up. That was at home on a Friday night in Champaign. They're going to meet Michigan on a neutral site. I don't think if they played 10 times, they can beat Michigan. Maybe they beat them once. I don't like those odds. Iowa State is 19-1. Seen great flashes from them. Great win at Purdue earlier in the year. They have a game against Texas Tech today with the line moving tremendously. 19-1, I don't hate that because I think they're an Elite Eight team, but we'll see Monday night. I think Arizona will probably be about a 5-point favorite. I'll lay it with Arizona on Monday night if I can lay 5 or less. And then I do have Michigan State. They're back up to 48-1 now. They were down to 20-1 at one point. Tough, gritty. You watch that game Sunday against Ohio State. They were outplayed for probably 30 minutes. But down the stretch, they take on the personality of Izzo. Matt Painter, down 2, calls a timeout. Let your kids play Wednesday night against Michigan State or Thursday night against Michigan State. Izzo switches the defense. He knew what Painter was going to do. They end up forcing a 30-footer at the buzzer. Terrible shot. So I think we're at 4. Maybe we can get to 5 teams to win the national championship. But that's where my portfolio is going to lie. A couple other thoughts here as we close out the first segment here. Couple of notes. You know, a lot of folks like to get involved in the NFL draft, and you know, I love these polls of general managers and coaches and players. So they polled all GMs, and there were specific questions about the draft. They didn't ask if it was about your team, that GM. But so in a lot of cases, it's 31 GMs taking these poll questions. All 31 said the Raiders are going to keep the pick and draft Mendoza. I completely agree with that. Good luck telling me who's the second best quarterback in this draft. I'm seriously, everybody to me has flaws. I'm going to wait for the guys who've been in a talent evaluation in the league and get their reports because they're doing the work right now. A guy I really trust said Slaw was the second best quarterback last year, and that turned out to be true. Not many people had that call. And then this was the other interesting draft question I thought they asked. Who is the best prospect in this year's draft? Avril Reese, the linebacker edge from Ohio State, Got 17 of the 32 votes there. So mark that down when we're looking as these draft props come out. Don't look to Circa. We don't want to take your bets. We get beat every year in the draft. But look around. There's 8 other books in Illinois. They'll have a lot of props up there for you. And maybe we'll go through them as we get closer to the draft. I have to tell you, the landscape of these NILs and where college sports are right now, something has to give here. There has to be some regulation coming and coming soon, because Brendan Sorsby is the quarterback for Cincinnati last year. He transfers to Texas Tech. Now the University of Cincinnati is suing Sorsby. Why? Because he had a buyout on his NIL deal in Cincinnati. He had to pay $1 million if he left after only 1 year. And he didn't pay the million, so now they're taking him to court. Remember, Duke took their quarterback to court to transfer to Miami, then they settled out of court. What is going on here? It's total lawlessness. Oh, by the way, Texas Tech is just going to buy the best team in every sport. They paid that pitcher $1 million a year. They win the softball national championship. The pockets in Lubbock are truly amazing. And I'll close the opening segment with, I thought, an amusing promo that ESPN is running. Remember, ESPN said, we're getting out of baseball, it's too expensive, and so they didn't bid on the contract. But they've come up with the greatest solution of all time to the void that Sunday Night Baseball has left. They will feature a mix on Sunday nights of elite matchups in the WNBA and the NWSL. Now, many of you might say, what is NWSL? That's the National Women's Soccer League. I can tell you, I feel I'm an authority on that, because out of pandemic, it was Bundesliga and NWSL that came back first. I refuse to bet Russian ping pong. They're 4 points ahead. You can't even see it. What a con job that is. I never really was a big soccer fan, but I was forced to because of the pandemic. Famously, I hit 19 straight unders in the NWSL. It was the games, they were 3.5 when they all came back. By the time they got to the semifinals of their tournament that they ran, they were 1.5. But I rode that all the way along. Let me tell you something. There is no such thing as an elite NWSL matchup. I'm not saying women don't play soccer at an elite level. There's just not dominant teams. Every year it changes, right? The best teams, it's like baseball. The best teams might win 60% of the... There's no elite matchups. It's impossible. Meanwhile, on the other side, Adam Silver's got a bigger problem. Tanking? Forget about tanking. How about getting this deal done in the WNBA? They're still so very far apart. Because they want... The players want a percentage of gross revenue. That's never happening when they lose money. The owners are offering 27% of net revenue. They're taking the salary cap up 5X. 5X, still not enough. They have to get in here and make this deal work. They're going to blow the whole thing. But if they can get it done, then I will predict this. Every other Sunday night, it's going to be Caitlin Clark, Trinity Rodman. Caitlin Clark, Trinity Rodman. All right, when we come back on Palm Saturdays, we're going to talk to Jonathan Davis, one of the sharpest hockey minds around.
We're back with more Palm Saturdays, starring Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm, live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Presented by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be, with no bet fees, on 104.3 The Score.
Welcome back into Palm Saturdays. I'm Mike Palm. We're broadcasting live from 8 to 9 Central. Every Saturday morning, right here from downtown Las Vegas, I'm at Bar Canada. And we'll bring in, I think his first appearance on The Score, maybe ever, my good friend and great hockey analysis, coming to us via the Circus Sports Illinois hotline. It's Jonathan Davis. Jonathan's out here in the Pacific time zone as well. So thanks for getting up early with us. Jonathan, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Mike, I just got home. What do you mean, get up early? No.
John, let's start out. Let's talk a little bit about the Blackhawks. 22, 27, and 9, 53 points. They're 10 points out of a playoff spot. So not happening this year. It wasn't thought to happen this year. But they're on pace for a 15-point improvement over last season. To me, the bright spots have been the two defensemen, Kaiser and Crevier. What do you think has been the bright spots for the Blackhawks so far? Where are they ahead of pace in the development of this team back into a playoff team?
Well, you know, you draw in two players that I think have been, you know, are moving in the right direction. And the other one, look, stability and goal. Spencer Knight is providing them a chance to win every time he's out there. And, you know, that's something that the Chicago team hasn't had for quite some time. So, you know, look, the old Alain Vigneault line, you know, my goalie's better than yours, I win. Your goalie's better than mine, you win. And I just, I like, there was a great trade for the Blackhawks. It worked out obviously well for the Panthers. They got a Stanley Cup. But, you know, getting Seth Jones, you know, a really good fit in Florida, but Spencer Knight has provided that stability, and it's just, it changes everything and a team psyche when you've got a goalie that you can trust to make a save, and that's one of the keys, I think, for Chicago in moving up.
Jonathan, Connor Bedard came into the league much more heralded as a generational player than Macklin Celebrini did. Bedard injured, doesn't go to the Olympics. Celebrini was great. You have a ticket for Hart on Celebrini. He's currently, you know, second or tied for second shortest odds to win the MVP of the league. Maybe it's a case of expectations when we compare the two and we say how much, well, Celebrini's done so much better. Maybe it was just too high of expectations. But your thoughts on Bedard's development this year?
I think he's changed the narrative from a year ago, where people were, you know, were definitely down on Connor Bedard. Maybe he's not what we thought he was. And I think it was, you know, this off season was a growing process, from my understanding, with Connor Bedard. He took the losses extremely hard last year. He was very tough to be around, was my understanding from a lot of his teammates. And I think that you know, he used the summer to train very hard out in Vancouver. And he got himself ready for the season. And when you look, you know, at what he is doing, you know, look, plus minus doesn't tell you everything, but when you're a minus two on this Chicago team and you look at a lot of the players around you that are in double digits, and then you take a look, you know, Connor Bedard's 24 goals and 54 points, they're in a really good spot with Connor Bedard. And maybe he's not Macklin Celebrini, but he's a very darn good hockey player.
What are your thoughts on the head coach, Jeff Blossel? I have my opinions. I'll wait to see how this team develops over the next couple of years. But I know the organization was very high on the hire. He's touted as a very good coach in practice. There's much more structure and philosophy behind what he's doing. Obviously, their penalty kill is tops in the NHL, almost 86%. But they're second worst in giving up high danger chances and second worst in creating high danger chances. Blossel, 8 years in Detroit. He made the playoffs his first year. He didn't the last seven. Then he goes and becomes Cooper's top assistant in Tampa, and you saw three first-round exits from Tampa while he was there. Do you think Jeff Blossel is the right guy to take the Hawks back into being a championship contender?
I think, you know, to make a fair assessment, until this roster is a little stronger, like right now, you know, what Kyle Davidson has done is he's surrounded Connor Bedard and the young players with guys, you know, veteran NHL players. And, you know, whether it's a guy like Foligno or, you know, or Teravainen or Tyler Bertuzzi or an Andre Burakovsky, you know, you've got a lot of placeholders, I think, on this roster. They're not going to make hay until, you know, until this roster gets a little stronger and the younger guys develop. But the younger guys are, I think, moving in the right direction. And when you see your young talent continuing to improve from year to year, and, you know, I think the coach has to get some of that credit for it.
The Hawks have a very difficult stretch here. They have to do the mountain back-to-back after the loss coming out of the break in Nashville. They play a game with the puck drops 4 o'clock local time in Denver tonight, and then 22 hours later, or 19 hours after the game, a 2 o'clock local puck drop in Utah. Very difficult. My question leads into Utah. This franchise, when you go back to Phoenix, has missed the playoffs 14 out of 15 years. Right now, they currently hold a playoff spot if the playoffs started today. If you're the front office in Utah, Are you aggressive at the trade deadline, or are you patient knowing this team is probably a year away from really competing?
It's a good question, and I think, you know, my understanding is that there's a bit of an internal conflict between what the general manager wants to do, Bill Armstrong, and what the owner, Ryan Smith, wants to do. I think, you know, he really wants to see this team make the playoffs this year. You know, he's kind of like Bill Foley with Vegas. I mean, he doesn't really believe in participation prizes. He wants it. Now, so I think that in Utah's case, you know, there are some obvious needs to me with this team. They need help on the blue line. They need some size up front. But I think that what it would do for that market, for them to make the playoffs this year, and they would put them, you know, at least a year ahead of schedule if they did. I think they're going to make a move because I think the owner at the end of the day is going to win out. And I don't think it's the wrong thing. For them to make the playoffs this year for that market, considering, you know, where they've come from and where a lot of these players have been the last number of years, it would be great. And they're in a good spot because, one, they're playing really well. They play very well at home. And two, they're getting help from some of the Pacific Division teams. I mean, we may end up seeing five teams from the Central Division make the playoffs.
I want to talk a little bit about the dynamic of being Canadian. You were born, we're talking to Jonathan Davis here on Palm Saturdays, hockey analyst and handicapper. You were born in Montreal, raised in Toronto. You live in L.A. now. I was listening to a lot of Toronto media this week. It's really quite amazing and disgusting at the same time. But one of the debates on some of the call-in shows was the point was made that for Canadian players as a player, it's more important to win a Stanley Cup than a gold medal in the Olympics, and for American players, more important to win a gold medal in the Olympics than win a Stanley Cup. I would say, in that media market in Toronto, the people that I was listening to on these shows, probably 75-25 agreed with that sentiment. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think so. I don't think it's more important. I think, you know, the narrative has been that for Europeans, gold medal is more important than a Stanley Cup. But I even think that that's changing. I don't buy it. I think that, you know, these kids today, I mean, this is what they want. I mean, they're in the NHL. The Olympics has been a bonus. They want to go and play in the Olympics. And yes, sure, they want to win gold. I would be very surprised that, you know, if you interviewed whether it's Austin Matthews, Tage Thompson, the Tkachuks, the Hughes brothers, winning gold is great. No, they want their name on the Stanley Cup. There's that you are forever. I mean, your name will always be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Your name will always be on the Stanley Cup when you win it. So no, I don't buy that narrative.
Let's talk Maple Leafs. The vitriol for Austin Matthews is incredible to me. The articles that are being written about him, that he betrayed the Leafs by going to Washington on Tuesday instead of going from Miami to Toronto, that he showed up for a president that is threatening to Canadians, that 60% of Canadians don't like, who's tried to cripple the Canadian economy, and he put his captaincy of the U.S. Olympic team ahead of his captaincy of the Maple Leafs, and he should be stripped of the captain, and it should be given back to John Tavares. Should the Maple Leafs, at this point, trade Matthews and Nylander and try to get a big haul and rebuild? They did this 10 years ago. That's how they got those guys and Mitch Marner. Is it time to tear it down in Toronto?
Okay, so a couple of things to dissect there. One, if you're going to take the captain, if you're using the argument that they are about why he should, the captaincy should be stripped, then do the same for Jack Eichel in Vegas. Look, Austin Matthews has been a polarizing figure in Toronto. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, look, he hasn't been there for the big games, and I think, you know, there is a sense of frustration. Should they tear it down? Yeah, I mean, I think so. And look, I will not be surprised if William Nylander is the guy that's heading out, between now and March the 6th, the NHL trade deadline. In Austin Matthews' case, I mean, look, he's got 2 years left. I have a feel, you know, I keep being told by one camp that Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid want to play on the same team. I just don't see Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews. I know they're represented by the same agent, but I just think that those two guys are two totally different people in the way they approach the game. I'm not a big Austin Matthews guy. I don't think he's a guy that you win with. I think, you know, there's been speculation that he's got serious health issues, although whatever he's been dealing with, he has been a little better this year. At the end of the day, Austin Matthews to me is a guy that likes to win and doesn't hate to lose. And I wouldn't want to hitch my horse to Austin Matthews if I'm trying to win a Stanley Cup.
John, you're very good with player props. Big card today on a Saturday. What are your best bets for the listeners?
Yeah, we can start with, you know, maybe let's take a look at some of the morning games here. You take the first game on the board, the Pittsburgh Penguins and New York Rangers. Igor Chinnikov, Pittsburgh Penguins, to score a goal and to go over his shots on goal prop at over 2.5. Chinnikov, since coming to Pittsburgh, has been on quite a roll since leaving Columbus. I like that one there. A little further down the board, a little later on in the day, when it comes to a player prop, there are actually some team totals. I love the Buffalo team total at Tampa under 2.5 today. I think the Sabres, it was a big win for them in Florida last night against the Panthers. They thoroughly, I thought, you know, they emptied the tank. I like Buffalo team total under 2.5. Just trying to grab a couple of Claude Giroux. I would play him for both a goal and an assist at Toronto tonight. I think you're going to definitely cash one of them. You're going to come away with plus money. Claude Giroux's got 56 points in 53 games, regular season games, against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And it's Saturday night. You got to play Cole Caulfield. He is Mr. Saturday Night. He's got 13 goals on Saturday night playing on Hockey Night in Canada. He's got 7 goals in the last 3 Saturdays. Cole Caulfield for a goal at plus 140 and maybe a little pizza money for 2 goals at plus 900.
I think thank you, John. There's a lot of betting opportunity in the NHL right now with this condensed schedule. There are just scheduling losses out there. I was on Buffalo last night. I'm on Tampa Bay today. This is a scheduling loss. Minnesota went all in Denver Thursday night. They played everybody back, all the Olympians. They're chasing the Avalanche for first place in the division and for first place overall. But then that was a scheduling loss at Utah on the back-to-back last night where they rested everybody. So I think there's tremendous opportunities here. John, I'm going to close with this question. You live in L.A. You go to a lot of Kings games. Are you on Calgary as a dog tonight on the road? And will you be at crypto.com with the fire Jim Hiller sign?
I will not be at the game, unfortunately. I am on Calgary, and I actually I've got a little parlay going. Kings team total under 3.5 with Detroit team total under 3.5. But I did bet Calgary money line. The LA Kings this year won a favorite of minus 150 or greater, 6-12.
Oof, great stat, John. Thank you so much for the time this morning. That's Jonathan Davis, everyone. You can catch him on Ice Cap, on Sirius FM, as well as XM, as well as all of the various VSiN programs that he appears on each week. All right, when we come back, we're going to detail this epic run of futility against the spread by the Chicago Bulls. It's Palm Saturdays here on The Score.
We're back with more Palm Saturdays, starring Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm, live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Presented by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be with no bet fees on 104.3 The Score.
That's it. We're taking you all the way to the end of the hour and inside the clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw coming up in just about 15 minutes. We've debuted this show on Saturday, March 7th. I note that because the Chicago Bulls were 0-11 in the month of February. They played that night. We talked about the Bulls on that show. So we got in on the last 8 games of it. In the 0-11 in February, they are also 1-10 against the spread. They've only covered one game. And here's what's even better. In the 10 losses, they missed the number by an average of 11 points. In other words, if they're a 9-point dog, they're getting beat by 20 on average. It's truly incredible. And they're not tanking, folks. This is not a tanking problem. They can't tank. They won too many games in the first half of the year. If they lost all the rest of the games, they're going to get like the 7th best chance to win the lottery. Come on. I know they punted on the season when they went out and traded for all guards and second-round picks. But they can't tank. This is not intentional. They're just this bad and haven't played together. At Heat, February 1st, they were a 3.5-point favorite. 3.5-point dog. They lost by 43. At Milwaukee on the 3rd, they were a 2.5-point favorite. Lost by 16. At Toronto on the 5th, they were a 9.5-point dog. Lost by 16. Home to the Nuggets on the 7th. That night we debuted the show. 4.5-point dog. Lost by 16. At Brooklyn on the 9th, they were a 2.5-point favorite against the awful Nets. Lost by 8. At Boston on the 11th, they were a 12.5-point dog. Lost by 19. Then Toronto at home on the 19th, getting 4.5. Lost by 9. Pistons at home on the 21st, getting 10.5. Lost by 16. The only game they covered was the back-to-back at home to the Knicks. Catching 10.5, they only lost by 6. I don't know. The layup of all of them was as good as the Hornets have been playing. They were only catching 7.5 at home against the Hornets. Hornets beat them by 32. I think the game was tied at half, and the Hornets beat them 42-16 in the third quarter. And then against the Blazers, catching 3.5, they lose by 9. The market can't react quick enough because they actually aren't tanking. Utah, tanking. New Orleans, tanking. We know that, right? And these numbers get out of hand. Now, what are we going to do to solve tanking? I've heard a lot of interesting ideas about what Adam Silver can do to solve tanking. One of them is, at a certain point in the season, the losses no longer count towards you getting the most balls in the lottery. Like, you cut it off at some point in February and say no more. Now the records are what they are, and so you get no incentive to play bad down the stretch. I heard another interesting idea. It's not Mitch's idea, but he brought the idea up when I was on Follow the Money on VSiN with Mitch and Paul Howard on Wednesday. If you lose by 13 or more points, the loss doesn't count towards your number of draft balls in the lottery. I have a different philosophy. I think that the 8 teams that make the playoffs on each side, those 6 teams, of course, they go in reverse order. If you win the championship, you pick last. All the other teams that don't make the bracket, they get one ball in the lottery. And those teams get drawn. You have no incentive. If you get beat in the play-in or you have the worst record, you have the same chance of getting the first draft pick. JVT said another idea, you can't draft in the top 4 in consecutive years. They're all decent things to do. Remember, you have to play at least 65 games to get one of these season-long awards. That it does encourage players to play more and try to minimize the effect of this load management. You got a situation where your 2 favorites were MVP. It looked like maybe neither of them could get to 65 games, but I think SGA will now that he came back. Jokic can only miss one more game to get to 65, but I think that's been settled already. All right, let's take a look at both the college basketball card today and the hockey card today for my best bets. Great matchups on both sides. I think there's a lot of betting opportunities here. First game for me is Virginia at Duke. Duke riding very high. They're really in a sell-high spot here. You could have said that about the game against Notre Dame coming off the win against Michigan, but Notre Dame is just awful, and that's my alma mater. I don't know the love of Shrewsbury, where that all came from, because he won a few games at Penn State, but they are awful. Maybe Mike Bray was just a lot better than we really knew to have that team competitive for so many years. Anyhow, Virginia's a pretty tough team. Still play good half-court defense. I grabbed this number at 11. This number opened 8.5, bet up to 11. I see it's come down at circa now down to 10.5. I think if you can get 10.5 or 11 or more, Virginia's worth the play at Cameron today. Next game we're going to go to on the college basketball card, Kansas at Arizona. Now, remember, this is a revenge spot for Arizona. They suffered their first loss of the year on that big Monday game what was it, 3 weeks ago now, coming up this Monday, when Peterson didn't play for Kansas. Bill Self, this is an unbelievable stat. Kansas at home on Big Monday has won their last 41 games. Well, this is McHale now. It's not the fog. However, I think this number got out of hand. Now up to 9.5. When it got above 8.5, I said this is a small play for me. Half unit here. We're going to take the Jayhawks on the road today. If I could have grabbed this number on Thursday, I should have. I drew a line through Texas Tech when Toppin got hurt. This game in the look-ahead earlier this year before his injury was 7.5. Iowa State hosting Texas Tech at Hilton and Ames. It was only 9 yesterday. Now up to 10.5. I'm going to pass on it here. Interesting game with the team I talked about, Florida. They play Arkansas today. They host them. Florida's been an absolute train, rolling everybody at home, on the road. I think the Arkansas guards can play with the Florida guards, but they cannot match up on the boards here. I played this game over a high total, over 169. I think there'll be plenty of pace and plenty of second chance opportunities for the Gators. And then Gonzaga at St. Mary's. These teams met on January 31st at the Kennel. Gonzaga was a 10-point favorite, or 9.5, depending on which book it closed at. They didn't cover. They won by 8. Now we go to Moraga. This game now 2.5 in some spots. If you can get three, St. Mary's is a play for me today. All right, let's flip now the script over to hockey today. I, as well as Jonathan Davis, our guest today, is on Calgary tonight. You can find them plus 140. What two no-shows have the Kings had coming back from the break? Jonathan Davis told me 3 weeks ago the Kings are not making the playoffs. I said, John, they have the easiest strength of schedule the rest of the way out. How are they not making it? They have Darcy Kemper, an Olympic goalie. He said, Mike, they're not good enough. They come back. They were a 170 favorite against the Henderson Silver Knights. Nobody played. I mean, talk about Austin Matthews gets grilled by the Toronto media. The Knights are on with Scott Van Pelt while they're playing. No shot of playing. Vegas comes back, scores 5 in the third to beat the Kings, and then they totally no-showed against the Oilers. They had to pull Kemper. I'm going to play against them here until they prove me wrong. I think they're a dead team walking. I think Seattle and Vancouver are. The problem there is those two teams meet tonight, so you can't make anything out of that game. I am going to play Tampa Bay today. That's another scheduling spot against the Sabres. We won with the Sabres in Utah last night. I'm going to play the Lightning on the puck line. Minus 125 in the market is the best line. Florida went all out. The Swords were all in last night in South Florida. The Lightning have the rest off the trip to Carolina. So we'll play the Lightning in that spot. And then I'm going to go over 5.5 Predator Stars tonight. Fake ace, the fakest of all the aces, Ottinger, who didn't see 1 second of playing time in Milan. Not 1 second. The gods knew about this fake ace. He comes back tonight. DeSmith played the first game for them. Preds usually put up a few goals on him. You might look at their team total over 2.5 as well. And I have one more game on my card here in college basketball that I want to throw in there for your consideration. Let's go to the ACC today. Brad Brunell is a really good coach. And I think Louisville's a bit overrated. They come off the tough loss at North Carolina, and now they have to go to Little John Coliseum. Let's play Clemson as a 2-point home dog today. The Clemson Tigers, plus 2. So that rounds out our play card for today. We'll be sure, for full transparency, to track these plays each and every week. We did go 1-2 last week, our first losing week here. We'll close out the show with a couple of rest in peace, some sad news from earlier in the week. I'm sure all of you out there, Big Ten fans, know Ron Delmore. What a tremendous wide receiver he was at Purdue. Was on the Vikings roster, blew out his knee, and rehabbed away from the facility, so he wasn't around the players. And then we got the news earlier in the week that he had taken his own life by gunshot in his hometown. My sources in the Vikings say he would have made the team. He would have been the fourth wide receiver there, and definitely used in punt and kick returns. So a sad loss there. And then Bruce Fremming, the great umpire Bruce Fremming, worked the third most games in the history of Major League Baseball. Longtime National League umpire who started out umpiring when he was 18 years old. He fell at his home in Wisconsin earlier in the week on Tuesday. They transported him to a hospital in Milwaukee where he passed away on Wednesday. So rest in peace to Rondale Moore and to the great Bruce Fremming. All right, stay tuned to The Score. Up next, it's Inside the Clubhouse with David Haugh and Bruce Levine. We'll talk to you next Saturday morning on Palm Saturdays.